That's right. It is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast, on CBS Sports Radio. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there for home loan solutions that fit your life. Well, Rocket can. Welcome to the party. All righty. Week two underway. You know, I was saying in the last segment how we haven't really had a lot of points. It was 3-0, and we're at the end of the first quarter. Well, to start the second quarter, Justin Herbert threw a passing touchdown to his fullback. That was the first play into the second quarter. And then 3 minutes later, only took him 7 plays to go 75 yards. Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs get a touchdown. Mahomes with a pass to Jerick McKinnon. And that was for a 9-yard score. So it's the Los Angeles Chargers 10, the Kansas City Chiefs 7. Passing touchdown from Herbert. Passing touchdown from Mahomes, and also a Chargers field goal. And that's how we get to 10-7 with 11:38 remaining here in the first half. So fasten those seatbelts, buckle on in. Looks like the game that we thought we were going to get with points is going to end up, even though it slowly came to fruition, getting there with the way that the fireworks have been going off here in the first 3 or 4 minutes of this second quarter. And I think once you have one domino fall, you see the next domino fall. I would anticipate that this is then just dominoes falling all left and right. But really, the defenses in the AFC West to me are fascinating. Raiders don't really have much of a defense outside of Chandler Jones and Max Crosby on the edges. The Broncos have a good defense, but they didn't show it on Monday night with the way that Geno Smith was just unbelievable in that first half. Now, second half, he didn't play all that great. For the Chargers, they made a lot of moves this offseason. You saw Khalil Mack against the Raiders, his old team, the first team he played in the NFL with before getting traded to the Bears. He had 3 sacks. You know what Joey Bosa could do. Derwin James. You have J.C. Jackson making his debut tonight with the Los Angeles Chargers. He was the top cornerback on the market. And for Kansas City, I think what got lost in the shuffle last week, because everyone right away was like, oh, wow, look at what they did. Mahomes, 5 touchdowns in his first game without Tyreek Hill. And that was the storyline. And sure, the Arizona Cardinals don't have DeAndre Hopkins for the first 6 games because of the suspension. You saw an offense for Arizona kind of look dull. And I got to give credit to that Chiefs defense, because you held Kyler Murray in a game that they were trailing 14-0 after one. So you know they're going to throw. You held Kyler Murray to under 200 yards passing. Kyler Murray only had 193 passing yards and 2 passing touchdowns, and you kept him in check rushing the football. He only had 29 yards running the football. As a whole, Arizona only had 103 yards on the ground. And for Kansas City, that was probably something that was not talked about enough this offseason, is what is the defense going to be this year? No more Honey Badger. He's now with the Saints. The defense, when they won that Super Bowl, they were good. They were serviceable. But then the last 2 years, they've been a bad defensive team. They've not been up to par of just be serviceable, just be okay. And then with your quarterback, if you go make timely stops, you should be able to win. So the lay of the land here in the AFC West is fascinating to me. And we keep on talking about offense, because offense is what drives the train. It's an offensive league, happy passing quarterbacks and all that. But the defenses in the AFC West is personally what may end up being the tiebreaker to who goes and wins the division. And that's why I went with the Chargers this year to win the AFC West. Because the Chargers, to me, are the most well-rounded team in that division. Now, there's expectations, and the Chargers usually don't meet those expectations. But you look around, Brandon Staley is a defensive-minded coach. Brandon Staley got this job because of what he did in multiple stops on defense. So for Brandon Staley, last year your defense was the Achilles heel. Everyone got caught up in the timeout against the Raiders. They called the timeout to make an adjustment on defense, and then after the timeout, still allowed all those yards. They had the worst rushing defense in the league last year. They fine-tuned that defense this year. They made alterations. Brandon Staley needs to go back to being the coach that we saw when he was with the Rams for that 1 year, where they were the number one defense in football. He needs to have a top 10 defense this year. And I think the Chargers defense will be a top 10 defense this year. And you add that in, I know Keenan Allen is hurt tonight, but you add that in with the offense of Herbert, Eckler, Allen, Williams. I think that's your best team in the AFC West. But there's still that dude number 15 that plays for Kansas City. And that's why this game tonight's fascinating, because these are the two best teams in the AFC West. No disrespect to the Broncos, no disrespect to the Raiders. The games inside the AFC West that I'm most excited to see this year, Chargers and Chiefs. And I don't love that this is the week two game. I would like to kind of see middle of the year and then the end of the year when you have these matchups. I don't like that this is week two. It's a little bit early, but it is a big early test. There is no doubt about that. When you look at this team, when they go up against one another. And I'm just trying to see, when's the next time these two teams do meet up? Oh, and then you get them in November. The Chiefs, they play the Chargers on the 20th. And then the 27th, they get the LA Rams. Listen to this four-game stretch, EJ. This is a tough four-game stretch for the Chiefs. Chargers in November 20th, into the Rams on the 27th, at Cincinnati, who you lost to twice last year, on the 4th, and then you're in Denver on the 11th. That's a brutal four-game stretch.
They got one of the toughest schedules in the league.
Yeah.
They start the year tough.
Yeah, well,
you know, they made
Arizona look like a cupcake.
Yeah, they made it look easy, but.
But after this week with the Chargers, you get Indy, you get Tampa, you get the Raiders, you get Buffalo, San Francisco, bye week, Tennessee. And then you get, at least you get Jacksonville coming up in week 10. You get the Jaguars in week 10. That's good. And then you get the Texans in week 15 and Seattle in week 16. I think they'll be on to Drew Lock by then. would be my guess if you're probably the Seattle Seahawks, because I'm not this big-time believer in Geno Smith. Even though Geno Smith, people wrote him off, he just elected not to write back. What'd you make of that comment, by the way?
I know Ryan said it didn't make sense. I don't care.
It made sense to me.
I think it makes sense. I've never
heard it said that way.
Neither have I.
But the way I interpreted this was people wrote him off, and when he says he didn't write back, he just didn't listen.
Right.
He didn't care. Now.
And I think to me also, the way I interpreted it was, when people write you off, there's an aspect of you having to accept that, yes, you are washed.
That you stink.
And he never accepted that.
Well, to be fair, is he a good quarterback? No.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he shouldn't think that.
Sure.
So for him, I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was a cool moment. And there was a difference in the second half. He didn't play well, but you win the game, no one cares.
Look, he's got a bunch of Seahawks, you know, legends that love him. So right now, he's, you know, a made man in that organization.
Richard Sherman loves him. I'm sure KJ Wright loves him.
I mean, all them guys.
It's wild, that Seahawks dynamic now. How much just jealousy and ego played a role. And we all know what it was. And KJ Wright even said it. That defense was coached hard by Pete. They didn't see him coach Russell to that same level and kind of made excuses for Russell when they were developing Russ, and now we know what Russ is as a quarterback. And that team was viewed as run with Marshawn, dominant. I mean, dominant defense. Now, in that Super Bowl, the LOB did blow a 10-point lead. But we know how everyone remembers that game. You're at the goal line. Russ got intercepted when everyone in America knew the ball should have been in Marshawn Lynch's hand. And that's when KJ Wright was on the show and he said, yeah, that was the death of that team. He wasn't wrong, because everyone then, the defense was like, oh, how do we not give it to our guy Marshawn? And they didn't like Russ to begin with. And now, since Russ is no longer a part of that organization and they still love Pete, it's, yeah, we get it. The Broncos are going to be better than the Seahawks this year, but that game meant so much.
And when you say Seattle was Russ's team, which I think we all agree with, I kind of wonder how much the fact that...
Well, the last few years it was Russ's team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I wonder how much of Marshawn not speaking helped Russ really feel like he was the face and voice of that team. Because if you think about it, you're saying that, yes, the Seahawks are a run team, defense. You want to hear from the running back, see the running back.
Yeah, but Marshawn never wanted to talk.
He never. I know, and I'm saying I wonder if when we say it's Russ's team, is that a part of that?
Well, maybe the national perception, that's because KJ. Because
Russ, he'll find any camera and tell you, let's ride and go Hawks and all the
and
fun
faith
stuff.
And family and football and flying, the four Fs.
Yeah, he's got like a unfiltered
out, guitar,
mic.
TikTok, all that stuff. But, you know, it's great that you just said that. Because I'm still dissecting our interview with KJ Wright. And KJ said something that, like, Russ got all the credit and that annoyed people, paraphrasing. I remember everyone talking about that defense and Marshawn. But in the locker room, maybe you are onto something. Since Marshawn really wasn't speaking, and when you're a quarterback, you have to speak so much and you get so much coverage. People in the locker room knew our best offensive player at the time was Marshawn Lynch. But since Marshawn wasn't speaking, all the articles, all the attention in terms of the media on to get an offensive quote went to the quarterback in Russell Wilson.
Exactly.
So you're in that locker room and you know Marshawn doesn't want to speak and he hates the media to begin with. And then that's like the jackassery. But then you get annoyed when Russell Wilson is talking. And he gets the attention.
He's getting all the quotes. He's getting all the sound bites on TV. You see him all the time.
But it's not like the LOB didn't get the sound bites. The Richard Sherman, remember, with Aaron Andrews. Don't try that sorry-ass wide receiver Crabtree on me.
But think about it, though. The LOB in Richard Sherman, right, another voice. He's talking about himself. He's not talking about the team. He's talking about what I'm doing, what my secondary is doing.
Too many egos.
And with Russ, he's saying, let's ride. Yeah. Go Hawks. He's kind of really talking about the franchise.
You need alphas to win in this league. No one's going to discredit that. You have to have alphas. You have to have people that think they're the best of the best because this is a violent sport. But there's a way to be egotistical and not let it be a detriment to the team. The egos on that team became a detriment all around, where that was what we all speculated for years. Russ and the defense didn't get along. We're now seeing it play on out since Russ is no longer a part of the Seahawks. And that's just the way that the cookie crumbles on that one.
And it's so weird to me, this whole beef, I guess we want to call it, because usually when we think about sports...
You win a Super Bowl!
When you think of sports team beef, you think of, wow, those guys would have, like, just put their egos aside, maybe they would have won more.
Like if the Pacers didn't get into the fight, the malice at the Palace. Yeah, Kobe and Shaq. Well, they won so many, but
they
could have
won seven or whatever. But this team, though, like, it just feels to me like they ran their course. Like, I don't think of them and say, well...
Well, you know what's wild?
Yeah.
We talk more about the... And, hey, it's such a controversial play.
Right.
But we talk so much about the one they did not win that the one that they did win never really gets talked about.
I think because it was a blowout, too. I think people kind of don't even, like, that's not a memorable game.
But they,
they mollywopped Denver.
It wasn't a good game because it was a blowout, but it was impressive how much they destroyed that offense with all the great names that were on that offense, led by number 18. So that's a reason why you should remember it. The actual game, when you talk about greatest Super Bowls of all time, no one's going to tell you that's one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time unless if you're a fan of the 12th man. But when we talk about the team, they won. But we don't really talk about them winning. We talk about the one that they didn't win and how it blew up the entire team. So it's just wild. Anyway, 5:15 to go. Look at that. I tell you, there's going to be all these more fireworks coming and dominoes falling. It's still stuck at 10-7 between the Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs. But overall, getting back into this AFC West conversation, the offenses are going to be nuts this year. But at the end of the year, I wonder who we're going to view as the best defense in that division. And I do believe that the Chargers are going to have the most well-rounded team, and they're going to win the AFC West. Now, the division's not decided tonight. You send a little bit of a statement, though,
if you're the Chargers, if you go get this victory, when you start out the year, taking down not only the Raiders, which is a nice win. Now, I think the Raiders will be a playoff team this year. Nice win. But you go pull a little Superman's cape tonight in Patrick Mahomes and find a way to beat the Chiefs. Man, that'd be a big week two win. And not a lot of times we usually say there's a big week two win because you know how it is from week to week. You don't want to get caught up in the hype. But that would be one heck of a start for the Los Angeles Chargers. It is Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio. We come on back, a huge week for Tua Tagovailoa, Mike McDaniel, and also Mario Cristobal, the U. We're going to be talking a little Dolphins and the U as they get set to go up against Texas A&M, which Texas A&M just lost to App State. And I know Appalachian State has the upset alert all the time, and they're always a team that has a knack for causing an upset, and they almost beat UNC that crazy game to kick off the college football season. It's kind of crazy to me, though, when A&M just lost to App State and Miami's ranked better than them, that Texas A&M is a 6-point favorite this weekend. So we'll get into that Jimbo Fisher, Mario Cristobal coaching matchup and also discuss a little Tua Tagovailoa and Mike McDaniels. They get set to go up against John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson this weekend. Zach Yelp Show, CBS Sports Radio. This season, for the first time, you can hear every Westwood One NFL broadcast stream live for free. Mondays, Thursdays, Sunday nights, the International Series Holiday Triple Headers, and every postseason game. Catch all the action on the Odyssey app, on WestwoodOneSports.com via Westwood One Station Streams, or by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports. All sponsored by AutoZone. Free battery testing, free battery charging, replacement batteries that fit your needs. That is what makes AutoZone America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone. AutoZone. So, Miami against A&M this upcoming weekend, 9 p.m. Eastern in College Station. And we know Texas A&M is just coming off that loss to App State as overrated Jimbo Fisher gets set to go up against Mario Cristobal. I love the hire of the U to bring in Mario Cristobal. This is a huge game this weekend for Miami because in year number one of Mario Cristobal, if you could say, even though A&M is not what people maybe thought A&M was going to be, but if you could say we beat an SEC school in A&M, that's a big step in building the culture back in your program. Not that I'll be proclaiming that day, oh, the U is back, the U is back, the U is back, because this A&M offense stinks. And Jimbo Fisher probably should give up the play calling duties at this point. That was discussed this past week. But this is your first legit test of the season. Like when you play Bethune or Southern Miss, yeah, you took care of business 70-13 and 30-7, even after a slow startup against Southern Miss. That's not going to move the needle, really. And I like the Miami quarterback, Van Dyke, a lot. And I do think that Miami's going to win the game. But they are a 6-point underdog on the road, which is kind of nuts that A&M is a 6-point favorite. And I did see today, and maybe Vegas knew something, that the really reliable receiver for Miami, Xavier Restrepo, he's going to be out indefinitely with the foot injury. That was per the Miami Herald. So the timing of that, it's not obviously good. We all know that as I just smack my microphone as if you would think I'm a Miami fan and now I'm just getting all heat up.
I'm the Miami
heated
fan
up here about this and worked up over it. Are you a Miami football fan?
Yeah, huge.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I feel like you never see me wearing the, you know, Sean Taylor Miami shirt. And
I'm going to take a line from Spike Eskin once when okay. I was in a similar spot where you were, where Spike found out that I was a Patriot fan. And I said to him, when I was an intern for WIP and I wear my Patriot hat all the time or a t-shirt, you didn't realize that? He goes, yeah, sorry, I wasn't really paying attention to the intern wardrobe. So I have not paid attention to your wardrobe. And you're usually dressed very nice. I've not realized you wearing any Miami gear, which if you were, I would usually say, oh, you're a Miami fan. What do you, you know, just a little small conversation, small talk. What do you think about Mario Cristobal and the U? So where's your, after the receiver injury, where's your level of confidence? A&M was a favorite all throughout the week, and then this injury popped up today, and we found out he's out indefinitely. Do you think Vegas knows something that we don't? Because I look at this and maybe I'm just a sucker. I'm getting 6 points with Miami. I'll take the 6 points with Miami.
Well, number one, Restrepo has 11 catches of a TVD's 33 passes this year. So this is someone that Van Dyke has relied on heavily this year. He's very much like a slot receiver type of guy, a security blanket for Van Dyke. Miami in these last few years have struggled in these games out of conference against Power Five schools. They got just mollywopped by Alabama last year.
Well, yeah, because you had that snake Manny Diaz as your head football coach.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think that when you look at Miami in terms of these non-conference games, these bowl games, they lost to Oklahoma State a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. They have not ever really performed well, even in the years where they've played okay in the conference play. So I think that there's probably some concern about Miami going on the road against an SEC team, and I can understand them being an underdog despite what we saw from A&M.
But a six-point underdog. If you want to tell me A&M was the favorite, I'm not saying Miami should be an overwhelming favorite, even the favorite in this game, but to be a six-point underdog?
I'm telling you.
That's a lot for a team right now in A&M that their offense was embarrassing, like laughable last week up against App State. Their quarterback didn't even break 100 yards passing.
But Miami has one major
issue. And Haynes King.
But I think Miami has one major issue in this matchup, which is the Texas A&M pass rush and the Miami offensive line. The offensive line has been an issue for Miami really for the last 2 or 3 years. And I think that there's...
And Cristobal, even though he's done well, he's not been able to really, really work the magic.
Right, he just got there.
And building the recruiting trail.
Yeah, they have a
trail.
Really good O-line coach. And Cristobal, of course, a former offensive lineman at the U won a national championship. You know, they're still rebuilding on that line. So when you take that offensive line that is still kind of working the kinks out, Zion Nelson didn't play the first week. He's still kind of getting back. He could be a first-round left tackle. You're not going up against an SEC defensive line. A lot different than Southern Miss, who they had trouble blocking in the first half.
They did. I watched the first half of that because I laid the...
I was throwing stuff in my...
Was it 24 and a half, I think it was, and they lost by 20... they won by 24?
Yeah.
So I just got screwed by that last week. The two big bets that I had on like big numbers, I'm not talking about money-wise, just in terms of the numbers last week, was Penn State, which covered. It was like a huge spread, another 20-something point spread in Miami as well.
I feel like the Miami fan base is... hopeful for this week, but I don't think that they're expecting to win, regardless of what Texas A&M did, because we've seen what Miami's been the past.
Yeah, I would expect to cover. Right. That's the way that I would put it.
Right.
That should be a close game.
Right.
But for an A&M, this has potential to get really ugly. Because that was, you look at App State, you should have beat App State. You know, going into the season, no one's saying, no, App State, it was a heck of a week for the Sun Belt. App State, Marshall, Georgia Southern, it was a heck of a week for that conference. But if A&M loses to Miami, the next week you play Arkansas, who's a better team than you right now. They're 10th in the nation. Sam Pittman does a great job. I like KJ Jefferson as a quarterback. Then the following week it's at Mississippi State, and then you get Alabama. So for A&M, you lose this game, you're probably losing Miami, Arkansas, and Alabama. You know, if you do lose to Miami, that would be four losses potentially. Four on the season. And you wouldn't even be midway through October yet. So A&M, you got to see a level. It's weird because they're home. It's A&M. You got to see a level of – you'll learn early in this game what type of A&M team you're going to get. Are they still caught up in the just disaster that was last week where their quarterback, Haynes King, could only have 97 yards passing? Because if Miami comes out, that's a huge key for Miami. Score first. Get the ball first, march right down the field without your wide receiver. You score a touchdown. You go up 7-0. That's when panic starts to set in for Texas A&M because that's a group where you know how it is at an SEC school when Jimbo talked a lot of stuff this offseason and you lose a game like App State, it all starts crumbling down and it all starts caving in. So the start of that first quarter is an enormous first quarter for Miami and A&M. So I can't wait to see the way that it plays out. And then also this weekend, it's going to sound like we're like a local show in Miami right now. I know we're on WQAM and 790, and we always appreciate them taking us. But for the Dolphins, that's another game that intrigues me. Because the Dolphins made a statement last week that they are better than the Patriots. They have the Patriots' number the last few years. They're the second best team in the AFC East. We all know the Buffalo Bills are winning that division. It's not even up for debate. The Patriots' offense last week was the bigger story to me than the success of Miami's offense. Yes, right before the end of the half, 4th and 7, boom, Waddle, touchdown. Waddle like a penguin in the end zone. It was a great celebration. I can even say that as a Patriot fan. The biggest takeaway, though, from that game was how sloppy and awful that line was for the New England Patriots. So now, for Mike McDaniel and Tua, you have a win. You beat the hoodie in Bill Belichick, and now you go to Baltimore, and you get Lamar Jackson, John Harbaugh, Ravens now getting healthier, and that's a game that's a big-time litmus test to tell me if the Dolphins can be a playoff team this year. And you don't even have to win the game, but that's got to be like a field goal game with 2 minutes to go. And I got to see Tua this week step up and make some big-time plays. Like, Waddle, Hill, you have all the pieces that are in front of you. You know what the other dude is capable of. And that Miami defense is really damn good. Anyone that thought that defense could take a step back because Flores isn't there, that defense is really damn good. And you saw them put points on the board last week. The Melvin Ingram signing was very important. But this is a week where I know it's not always quarterback against quarterback, even though that's the way that it's marketed. I want to see if that Dolphins offense could keep up with the Ravens offense that may take a little bit of a step back this week because of the quality defense they're going up against. But I want to see if that Dolphins offense with Tua, and yeah, you're going to run the football. Yeah, they improved the offensive line. I get that. If they could go toe-to-toe with what we think is an elite offense or a top 10 offense in the NFL in the Baltimore Ravens. Because last week, the offense they were going up against, it's sloppy with the approach of Patricia, Judge, and whatever they're doing. The Pats have no offensive line. They don't have speed at the skill position players. Last week, you did your job. You did what was expected of you. Now, I got to see if you could take it to the next level. And this week, it's weird to say, in week two, you got some big games. Tonight, you have a big game. That's at halftime. Chargers and Chiefs. Chargers up by 3. Up against Kansas City at Arrowhead. But this weekend, when you get into that Sunday slate, that game, Ravens hosting the Dolphins, a lot of excitement there. Tua up against Lamar Jackson. This is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll do the closing bell next. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. EJ, are you on TikTok? By the way, I know I sound very old when I say that. Are you on the TikTok?
I am on TikTok.
Are you?
Newly on TikTok, but yes, on TikTok.
Have you made any TikToks?
Yeah. Some of the segments I've done on CBS Sports Radio have been on. As fact, someone on Zach Gelb Show.
Really?
With Ryan Hickey, but yes.
Who?
Ryan Hickey, who's enjoying himself in Alabama.
Oh, there was one thing you guys did that I thought was hysterical.
Was it the Pizza Hut ordeal?
What? Refresh my memory?
Pizza Hut was saying that they were going to be doing no pizzas. And I essentially said Pizza Hut isn't pizza, so therefore.
Oh, okay.
That could have been it.
If Pizza Hut wants to do an endorsement, yeah, I love Pizza Hut.
Oh, not Pizza Hut. I'm sorry. Papa John's.
I was going to say Papa John's.
No, I like Pizza Hut. I don't know why I was saying that. Papa John's is doing
that. Well, we live in New York, one of the pizza capitals of the world. So the odds of me getting Pizza Hut or Papa John's not going to happen.
Right.
Papa John's, though, does taste like cardboard.
Papa John's is
it's brutal.
Trash.
Yeah. So you guys had a big, intense debate on Papa John's?
No, we totally agreed. It was that Papa John's was doing these crustless pizzas.
What?
Yes.
You gotta have crust on a pizza.
Yeah, it was just, you know, basically sauce, cheese, and toppings in a bowl.
Yeah.
Papa bowls is what they were calling them.
I know Papa John had an ugly departure and all that, but I remember, like, he was on the record saying, it annoyed me about how the pizza was, and I tried, like, 50 different pizzas.
Yeah, he ate 50 pizzas.
Come on, dude. Why do you think the pizza is not good?
That guy's a mess.
Yeah. He would be at every Super Bowl. And he would have. My dad is pretty level-headed. I've never seen my dad more angry or angrier. When Papa John would walk into the Super Bowl, Radio Row Super Bowl week, with an entourage of like 40 people. It's Papa freaking John, for crying out loud. And he would have, like, Peyton Manning with him. The Watt brothers would be with him. It was always, like, big-time people with Papa John. And my dad would look at me, he goes, who gives a flying bleep about that guy? And he would go, his pizza sucks. So that was my dad. Not many things annoy my father. Bad service at a restaurant, and then Papa John. Those are like the and traffic. Those are the three things that annoy my dad. Traffic, bad service at a restaurant, and then Papa John.
A man's man there.
Yeah. So you're on TikTok.
Yes, I'm on TikTok.
I don't know if I call him a man's man, Bob Gell.
I mean,
my father. I don't know.
I like those. I like the three things you just told me, though.
Yeah, no man, traffic, man's bad, man bad traffic, a little bit too strong
not,
for that.
Not doing Papa John. Yeah. Like I like where we're going here with Mr. Gell.
He's a man. I don't know if he's a man's man. I think that's like means like you're a tough guy. You know, I don't know if my father's a tough guy. That I will say. But anyway, I know Maggie and Perloff do a bunch of TikToks. I was watching a TikTok of them at the vending machine today. I guess they do this Tasty Thursday segment. So I guess that's real scrumptious if you're going to the vending machine. Like we could do better than that. You know, I remember they always have like crazy food in this studio. I guess they must have forgot today, but they ended up going to the vending machine. Anyway, the reason why I'm talking about TikTok is I'm not on TikTok, but I'm on, I'm going to sound adult here, the Facebook. And when I'm on the Facebook, I scroll on videos and it shows me TikToks on Facebook or on Instagram.
Yeah.
And once I go down that rabbit hole, it's like when I used to go on the YouTube and I would watch like every James Corden carpool karaoke, which he's still doing. And he just did a carpool karaoke with Lizzo. And it was excellent.
I can imagine.
Oh, she has a great voice.
Yeah, she's a blast.
She's awesome. So that was really fun. But I was scrolling today on the Facebook. And when I was on the Facebook, the TikTok popped up, and it was a TikTok of Nebraska fans just losing their mind with the current state of the football program. They just lost to Georgia Southern. You had the terrible loss in Ireland when Scott Frost elected to be like a jackass and try an onside kick. And now Scott Frost is out of a job as he was fired. So this is via the Go Big Ready via TikTok. These are some Nebraska fans that have simply just had enough. Listen up.
I mean, look, I'm a three-time cancer survivor.
Congratulations.
All three of those cancers, thank you. All three of those cancers were easier to survive than the last four-plus seasons of this crap.
I mean, you can bring in all the guys that are talented and all of this and all of that, but defense takes a mentality. You know what you need on defense? You need boar hunters. These guys go shopping at Hy-Vee for their bacon. I need guys to go out and hunt in the woods and hunt these suckers down with knives. And they're not even doing any of that. Because you need a defense that fights with bloody knuckles instead of just hitting the damn face every week.
The Nebraska fans have lost their mind. You know who they sounded like? I heard a mixture of Todd in Tampa, who called earlier, who was freaking out right about Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen. And then I heard a lot of Mike Gundy in there.
Oh,
the whole,
yeah.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah, those were
come after me.
Those were definitely men's men. Yeah. Men in those calls, for sure.
Yes. My mother, by the way, texted me.
Oh.
She goes, a man's man? Nah. Man, my father's taking a beating on this show tonight. But yeah. Just a rough time if you're a Nebraska fan. Those are two really weird phone calls.
And what made it even weirder to me as a TikTok user, the music choice was also very weird.
Yeah.
Because, you know, on TikTok, it's smart to put
it's
music.
It's like upbeat, fun.
Yeah, yeah, usually, I mean, and you could do, you know, lighter music, but yeah, not to that. I mean, those guys, like, they were ready to line up and put on the black shirts and play on the defense.
Yeah, when I roll over at 9:30 in the morning earlier today, and the first thing I go to my phone, which I hate doing right away, but it just always happens. You can't break that habit. And the first thing I hear is a Nebraska football fan saying, I went through three bouts of rounds of cancer, and that was easier than watching this Nebraska football team. I was like, whoa, this is some heavy stuff.
Yeah,
to wake up to first thing in the morning. I didn't have a cup of coffee yet. And that did really wake me up. Anyway, Randy Cross joined us earlier. There's been two names that I've really seen thrown out there. for the Nebraska football job. One Matt Campbell, another Mark Stoops. So I had a little question to Randy Cross about the future of the Nebraska football job. People have been speculating for a little bit now, for the last few years, about Mark Stoops' next job. Naturally, Nebraska opens up with the Scott Frost firing. Everyone's now talking about Mark Stoops and Matt Campbell. If I'm Stoops, are you leaving for Nebraska now when you've done that good of a job at Kentucky? Wouldn't you wait for a little bit of a bigger job?
You know, I'm not sure if that's a step up, to be honest with you. Old Nebraska was a step up. But, you know, old Nebraska is a long time ago and a lot of failure ago. I think he'd be crazy to leave Kentucky. I think you're going to see several coaches get contract bumps and extensions because of this availability. So, you know, not only did it cost Nebraska about $8 million to fire their head coach early, it's going to cost a lot of schools a little bit extra money because they're going to have to give their coaches some extra love. Nebraska's going to be a hard sell, a really hard sell. You know, my old guy, my guy beat Brian Jones, BJ. He's of the opinion that a guy like Deion Sanders would be, you know, a good choice for Nebraska. And I'm not sure if he's not right. I at this point, they need to go out of the box. They need something that'll make a splash, especially in recruiting, because there's nothing of the old panache, the old zing when it comes to Nebraska. They need somebody that's really going to take them back.
So that was Randy Cross of CBS Sports. A lot of things to unpack there. I think you're 100% right in terms of Mark Stoops. If I'm Mark Stoops, I'm at Kentucky. I've built up Kentucky where I could have enough confidence in my own standing at that university where I could go after John Calipari and say, how dare you say that we're a basketball school? Look at what the football program's doing. Kentucky's had consistent success the last few years. It all got really started. Josh Allen, remember, being a top 10 draft pick. Benny Snell was a heck of a running back there. And then you've seen it now with Will Levis, who's projected to be a first-round pick. They're a top 10 team in the country. That is a group, and that is a team where Kentucky has now not only become relevant when it comes in the landscape of college football, but they've been consistent. They have consistently beaten Florida, which is, it's just wild. So if I'm Stoops and you're one of those guys, everyone like respects what you do now, Mark Stoops. You come from a great football family.